88 to 91.
The Big Book of Pop, the World Encyclopedia of Rock and Roll, the entire internet. Throw them all out.
You find that amusing?
And replace them with The Blagger's Guide, radio's cut out and keep guide to the entire history of popular music. Did you hear that? In soundbite size form.
Get on with it, I'm on a double yellow.
I'm standing in the mighty spume off of Big Sur, which isn't a giant teacher, but a place in California. My Woody's parked out back, and I'm going to get gnarly and tubular any minute now, because welcome to the Blagger's Guide to... The Beach Boys. The Beach Boys, the epitome of the West Coast surf sound, the greatest vocal somethingette of all time. They were ace, and they wrote this.
Wouldn't it be nice if we were older?
And this.
God only knows what I'd be without you.
And this.
Everybody's got servants, serving USA.
Except they didn't. Chuck Berry did. Except for the words, because, as I said last week by mistake, the Beach Boys took the vocal harmonies of the four freshmen...
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Moving on, and put them over the rock and roll of Chuck Berry.
All over St. Louis, and down in New Orleans, all the cats wanna dance with sweet little 16.
And added lyrics about surfing. The Beach Boys' chief writer was Brian... Wilson,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
With his brothers Carl and Dennis, cousin Mike Love, and sort of mate Al Jardine, they wrote incredible harmonies, lyrics about surfing,
let's go surfing now,
cars,
fun, fun, fun,
girls,
well, East Coast girls are here.
And the Rhondda Valley in Wales.
Help me, Rhonda, yeah.
Sorry. They were at first managed by...
Blagger's Fact, you ass.
Brian's dad. The appalling, really, the completely appalling Murray Wilson. Murray's two contributions to the group's music were A, to drill them robotically to get a perfect sound, and B, to beat Brian so badly that he was permanently deafened in one ear. What an awful, awful man. Right, impress your friends with this lot. What did Brian used to sit in to write in...
A box of sand.
Okay. What album caused Brian Wilson to freak out before...
Sergeant Pepper.
Right. Which serial killer did Dennis Wilson befriend?
Charles Manson.
Wrong. It was Charles Manson, who became close enough to the band that, amazingly, they actually recorded one of his songs, Cease to Exist, which they renamed Never Learn Not to Love. The amazing part about that is that Charles Manson was a bloody awful songwriter. Mind you, so is Christa Berg, and he's not in jail for life. Think about it. Anyway, the Beach Boys ditched both Murray and the surf thing, and Brian decided on a new direction.
Guys! Guys! I've got a new direction.
Cool, Brian. Hey, is it roller skating?
Yeah, roller skating is cool. Girls do it and you can pick them up and then there's kissing. It's great.
No, guys! It's not roller skating!
It's not barbecues, is it? Because they're pretty cool.
Yeah, girls come and you make them burgers and you give them beer and then there's kissing.
No! Our new direction is complex harmonic pop with a deeply personal emotional content.
Is there kissing in that?
The resulting album, Pet Sounds, sold so badly that it was beaten in the charts by...
Blagger's Fact.
A Beach Boys greatest hits album released in competition with Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys record company. How nice is that?
Wouldn't it be nice?
Not nice. That's how nice. Brian, however, was undaunted. He decided to record the ultimate pop album. It was to be called Smile. It would rival the Beatles, and it would change the face of music forever. Except, halfway through recording it, Brian went mad from LSD and didn't get round to recording the album until 2 years ago. The rest of the 1960s wasn't a good time for Brian, although the rest of the band soldiered on. They released some of their best work. In fact, start a fight in a surf pub by telling some gimpo who's just put Good Vibrations on the jukebox for the ninth time, and not just the single version, no, the demo with a different backing track, that the greatest Beach Boys records are in fact the ones without much Brian. Yes, let's hear it for Wild Honey! sunflower. And Carlin the Passions. And let's especially hear it for the Beach Boys' crowning early 70s glory with songs from the Smile Project, the classic Surf's Up.
The music for the Cosby Band, the music for this was for now.
Especially notable for Blagger's Fact, a song sung by the band's then manager. A fantastic anti-left-wing riposte to the Beatles' revolution. And the awesome title track.
Carriage across the forty step to land my cellar to.
Whose lyric caused
Blagger's Fact, Schweinhund.
Much offence to Mike Love. True.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Mike! Wanna sit in my sandbox?
No, I think your dog did something in it.
I have a dog?
Never mind. It's about this lyric. I hate it.
No! I heard the introduction to the sketch. Why don't you like it? My new friend Van Dyke Parks wrote it, and I think it's peachy.
No one says peachy.
I have a dog?
Just look at this stupid lyric. The music's all lost for now. To a muted trumpeter swan. Columnated ruins domino.
I can't understand a word of it. Well, if it comes to that, what about surfing USA? That doesn't make sense. If everybody had an ocean across the USA. If everybody had an ocean. There's 100 million people in this country. That's a hell of a lot of ocean.
It's notion. If everybody had a notion.
I have a dog.
Anyway, the Beach Boys rode out the 70s, had a brilliant late period hit.
Key Largo, Montego, Bay,
and these days, Brian tours his old albums. And there's even talk of the surviving members getting back together again. Remember what they used to say? Mike Love, not war. Ta-da!
Hi, I'm Kate Moss, and I'd like to make you the offer of a lifetime. As you know, I'm a big rock fan. No, I'm not. I've been out with all of the top stars, from Bobby Gillespie out of Primal Scream to Pete Doherty out of the Libertine. And I'm also best mates with lots of other pop stars, from Noel Gallagher to Liam Gallagher. So, when a top publisher asked me to write my own encyclopedia of rock, I said yes, because nobody knows rock the way I do, and that's why I've written this. Kate Moss's encyclopedia of rock. 26 volumes of rock fabulous pop facts, from ABBA to Zappa. So come on, send a check or Visa card details to this address.
Kate Moss's Encyclopedia of Rock. Care of Priory Books, P.O. Box 327, Plymouth.
And get Volume 2 free with Volume 1.
Hello there. Welcome to the Blagger's Guide to Political Pop. Now, a lot of people say this about political pop.
The thing is, Hugh, politics and pop don't mix.
Too true. Yep, too true. Yep.
Really? Then how about this?
Up off the American, lick your face. There's a row going on down this side.
And this.
Say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
And this also, too, as well.
Good God, y'all.
What is
pop and politics go together like a horse and carriage. If we didn't have pop and politics, all music would sound like this.
I'm flying without
and we'd all be zombies. So, political pop was invented by Bob Dylan in the 1960s, when he stopped writing songs about being a tramp and noticed the Cuban Missile Crisis.
It's a hard rain, you're gonna fall. I'm your masters of war. Here they build a big gun, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times they are rich.
With his girlfriend, Joan Baez, Dylan toured the coffee shops of the world, singing about change, no, not that kind of change, and drinking way too much coffee.
Man, I'm beat. I must have sung like about 500 songs. Sure hope the world changes soon or I'll go mental.
Bob!
Yes, Joan? What is it? Some world crisis that needs a pithy lyric and a nicked-up old folk tune?
No, listen to this.
Wow! Electric guitars. Guess I'll stop singing about politics and go jangly.
And so he did. But others carried the flag for politics. And as the Vietnam War got worse and the generation gap widened, so Buffalo Springfield wrote their classic For What It's Worth.
Time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
A seemingly hard-hitting song about taking sides that was...
Blagger's fact.
Actually, a protest song about a Los Angeles nightclub being closed down. How crap is that? In fact, much of 60s protest pop was a bit vague when it came down to the details. Unless it was...
Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading,
telling us we were all gonna die, or telling us we were all gonna not die. But as the 60s ended, everyone got political.
John, Yoko, can you tell us why you're in bed?
We live here. What are you all doing in our bedroom?
John, I told you you hadn't locked up lovely.
John, is this a bed in for peace?
No, it's me day off. Now, off.
Oh, they've trampled my hydrangeas. Call the police.
Yoko, we're moving. If that's all right with you.
The Beatles, who'd once believed that all you need is love, became, in their solo years, a lot more political. John Lennon made the social commentary album sometime in New York City. George Harrison protested about famine in Asia. And Paul, the cute one, the one who wrote Michelle and went out with Jane Asher, Paul wrote... While Ringo just avoided politics altogether.
You're 16, you're beautiful, and you're mad.
Oh, just time for us.
Blagger's footnote.
After the BBC banned Give Ireland Back to the Irish, Paul McCartney responded by releasing a children's nursery rhyme as his next single.
Mary had a little lamb.
Now that's postmodern irony.
His fleece was white as
the 70s was a very angry decade. It was oil shortages, war, and bad trousers, which meant people had a lot to protest about. And while white rock acts sang about how important their testicles were, soul and reggae continued to be very angry.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying.
The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner. The revolution will not be televised, brother.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your life.
Then came disco. Disco was very happy music, and apart from insisting that we all go dancing and then take some men to the YMCA, it wasn't at all polemical. That was the job of...
I am an anti-Christ.
Punk rock!
Around the
punk was all about protest. It was against things the way a ladder is against a wall, only angrier and without any rungs. First, there was rock against racism. Then, there was rock against sexism. Then, it was just rock against the first thing that comes into your head. Punk was anti. Anti-establishment, anti-police, anti-royal, anti-nowhere league. Punk was followed by the equally political post-punk.
They use it every day.
Oh, and special mention must go to... Crass, the original, in every way, anarcho-punks. Crass, who so opposed the right-wing establishment that...
Black as fact.
The KGB tried to recruit them. You don't get that with the Kaiser Chiefs, do you? Anyway, there was the equally political two-tone...
See Blagger's Guide, Series 1, Episode 1.
But then, disaster struck.
Always
80s were the decade of greed, of dressing up, and of not caring. An old woman could fall over in the street and get all muddy, but if she wasn't wearing the right makeup, Steve Strange would step over her. Possibly. When every pop star looked like the audience should be shouting, "Behind you!" at them, social conscience was not a priority. Thank goodness then for Billy Bragg!
I don't want to change the world. I'm not looking for a New England. I'm just looking for another girl.
Born Stephen William Bragg and former member of obscure punk group Riff Raff, Billy Bragg was politicised by the 1984-85 miners' strike and drew on both The Clash and The Jam to create a new political sound.
I was a miner. I was a docker. I was a railwayman between.
Astonish your chums with this.
Bragger's apocryphal story.
Rock legend has it that one day, Billy Bragg was on the London Underground when he had some difficulty with the new ticket barriers. Approaching a member of staff, he said,
"Here, these barriers are dangerous. Someone could really hurt themselves."
To which the London Underground person replied,
"Well, didn't you hear a song about it then, smarty bum?"
Now that's postmodern irony. There were other great political moments in rock. No, not that. This.
Free Nelson Mandela.
And it worked.
Here's your bread and water, Nelson Mandela.
Can I have my transistor radio back?
I have not got your transistor radio. First, you're an evil terrorist, and now you go around accusing people of stealing. No wonder you have spent 21 years in captivity, right?
What is that in your pocket?
Oh, it must have fallen in to my pocket.
Give it to me. I want to listen to Mark Goodyear on the Top 40 Rundown.
You can't.
Why not? It's Sunday night. I always listen to Mark Goodyear on the Top 40 Rundown. It helps me forget that my shoes are too tight to fit my feet.
It's not on this week.
But it says it is in the Radio Times. Oh, ho. You don't want me to hear it because of that record.
What record?
The one about me.
I've got to go now.
Ah, I have a record about me. Me.
These days, what with all the peace and happiness and lack of wars and nice politicians, there's not much reason for political pop. Still, who needs searing musical social comment when we've got James Blunt? He's a soldier man.
Houses burnt beyond repair. The smell of death is in the air.
Coming soon to Radio 3, a new drama. The Prog Rock Doctors.
What's wrong with this one, Dr. Wexman?
Playing keyboards with knives, Dr. Gabriel slipped and severed his tarsus.
Right. 50cc of squonk and stand back. I'm going to perform an emergency drum solo.
Dr. Wexman.
The Prog Rock Doctors. Coming soon. The six wives of the Prog Rock Doctors on ice.
Hello, welcome to the Blagger's Guide to Sheffield, the land of steel. Sheffield is one of the great rock cities. Why? Because it is. Also, because of this lot. No other town has such a ridiculous diversity of musicness. From the murky electro of Cabaret Voltaire to the trouser cuke nuke rock of Def Leppard. Sheffield encompasses the lot. Why? I was even born there.
You don't sound like you're from
Sheffield. We moved. I love Sheffield. Its first big star was pipefitter Joe Cocker. He began his career with a cover of a Beatles song. That's right, it was, of course, I'll Cry Instead, and it bombed.
I'll show you what a loving man can do with the land. I'll cry instead.
Undaunted, Joe tried again. This time He scored big. Soon, he was able to give up fitting gas pipes and concentrate full-time on doing terrible ballads with 80s birds. At least he didn't do Octopus's Garden. In the 70s, Sheffield wasn't especially rocktastic. It didn't even have a proper punk band. What it did have, oddly, was a thriving art pop scene. Bands like the aforementioned Cabaret Voltaire, the Comsat Angels, and the Human League. Interested in stupid names and musical experimentation. The city was packed to the rafters with strange bands all learning the Wasp synthesizer.
Hello, my name's Phil Oakey and I'm in a band.
Aye, well, you've come to the right place, lad. Welcome to Threpley's Musical Emporium. We've got it all here. Harmonicas, guitars, banjos, trombones.
Have you got any synthesizers?
Let's have a look. Granville, have we got any synthesizers?
No, we had a run on them last week.
Oh, I'm sorry, lad. Can I interest you in aught else? Drum machine, the vocoder. Oh, he's gone.
Hey, up. I'll do. We're Cabaret Voltaire.
Oi, can't you read? No more than one member of a few for future influential art dams in the shop at the one time.
That's exactly how it was. The Human League, meanwhile, were forming from the ashes of, and I quote, meat whistle and musical vomit. Theirs was a tumultuous career. Impress your robot slaves by reminding them that the Human League, who took their name from
Liger's Fact,
a science fiction war game, started as a very hardcore synthesizer band, with records like The Dignity of Labor, Parts 1 to 4.
I got pineapple.
Stop messing about. And then they split into two halves. You could hardly split into three halves, but you know what I mean. One was led by doomy-voiced flophead Phil Oakey. And the other had doomy-voiced blondehead Glenn Gregory. Heaven 17, by the way, under their other name of British Electronic Foundation, were responsible for reviving the career of none other than Tina Turner. Which isn't very art rock synthesizer-y at all. But the success of the League and the 17 unleashed a whole new wave of top Sheffield bands, the most notable of which were, of course, Vice Versa, who, once they changed their name to ABC... brought glamour, wit and tunes to the charts. Their next-door neighbours, the Comsat Angels, stopped being indie and went American college rock. And then the 90s happened, and exhausted, Sheffield had a musical kip. Apart, of course, from Fon Studios, whose name means something very rude, and Maloko, and of course the greatest Britpop band of them all, Pulp. Pulp are the great success story of Sheffield music, formed
amazingly ridiculous Blagger's Fact
in 1977. That's 1977, that's 29 years ago. Under the terrible name of Arabica's Pulp, Jarvis Cocker, no relation to Joe Cocker, let's get that done now, Jarvis Cocker's band hung around for decades, bringing out slightly odd records that not many people liked, and Jarvis fell out of a window and was in a wheelchair, suddenly, they started bringing out records that everybody liked. For a while, Jarvis was the coolest man in the world. He could do anything.
And our next contestant, please. State your name.
Jervis Cocker.
And your specialist subject?
Everything in world.
Right. What is the name?
Reykjavik.
Correct. Who invented the...
Madame Curie.
Correct. What is the...
Underwater.
Correct.
Ave Caesar, Morituri, De Salutant.
And at the end of
I know. Just give me the bowl finger.
That's how cool he was. So cool, in fact, that he got Scott Walker in to produce his next album and retired from being famous. So double cool that the bloke who used to play the guitar in Pulp, occasionally, Richard Hawley, was this year nominated for the Mercury Prize, as, Link, were another Sheffield act.
Argumentative, and you've got the face on.
The only band ever to be...
Blaggers Fact.
Covered by the Sugar Babes.
They did cover See the Day by DC Lee.
Shush. The Arctic Monkeys are the new face of Sheffield pop. So mine's a pint of hooray with a well-done chaser. Ondele! That's it. I'm off. Last show next week. Be there or be square. Bye!
The Blaggers Guide is written by David Quantick and Simon Poole.
The script editor was Steve Punt.
Presented by David Quantick.
The voices which were formed out of the mouths of and performed by were...
Kate O'Sullivan and Lewis McLeod.
Audio production was by Chris O'Shaughnessy.
The Blaggers Guide was a unique production for BBC Radio 2, yes?
OK, that's it. Thank you very much.